Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Project MedTech. I'm your host, Dwayne Mancini. As always, if you need anything from the podcast or would like to suggest a future guest, please email us at info@projectmedtech.com. If you enjoy this podcast, please subscribe and leave a review. And you can always visit our website, www.projectmedtech.com, or follow us on LinkedIn. My guest today is Lucien Blondel, Chief Technology Officer at Quantum Surgical. In this episode, Lucien and I discuss what he is working on at Quantum Surgical, his experience of his first company, MedTech SAS, being acquired by Zimmer, the robotics industry and where it's going, the evolution of raising money in France, and more. So without further ado, my discussion with Lucien Blondel.
Innovation starts with medical discussion. Talking about the future and what comes next with Project MedTech.
Lucien, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Dwayne. Happy to be there.
Yeah, so really excited to have you on. I believe you are my first French guest on the podcast, actually, or at least physically located in France right now. So good to have you on. Can you give the listeners just a little bit of background about who you are, what you do in the medical device space, and we'll take it from there?
Sure, I'll do that. So I'm an engineer by background, and I've worked 20 years in exclusively, I would say, in surgical robotics, both in startup environments mostly, but also in big companies, corporate environment. I have a strong background in engineering, but also in quality, regulatory, IP, because when you're in a startup, you have to do a lot of stuff and to work on those topics as well. I'm also very much market focused. So I'm serving the market and sharing that information with people. And I've been fortunate, you know, to work in surgical robotics since 2001, and to work on projects for knee surgery, brain surgery, spine surgery, also interventional radiology products. And right now at Quantum Surgical, we are in the interventional oncology. So I've seen quite a few areas of surgical robotics. And so I started in a very small startup, actually, that was called MedTech in Montpellier, south of France. We were just four people at the time. And we developed the first robot in knee surgery that we ended up selling to Zimmer back in 2006. Then we did another one that is called ROSA, that was intended for cranial neurosurgery, and that worked very well, especially in the US for epilepsy treatment. And I took a one-year break to travel in Asia. And then when I went back, I worked also at GE Healthcare. They were developing a very exciting platform in interventional radiology based on a mobile robot for both angio labs and hybrid ORs. And that was really a great experience to work at GE in this very strong culture company. And then I moved back to MedTech to drive the spine application of the ROSA robot that we ended up to get CE marked, FDA cleared, put on the market. And by that time, we were engaged into discussion with Zimmer Biomet, the whole group. And we sold the company in 2016. And we started all over again at Quantum Surgical with a new startup, a new project around liver cancer. So that's me.
Hey, awesome. Yeah, so you touched on a few things that we really wanted to talk about. The first time we had talked on the phone, we were kind of thinking, you know, what can we share on the podcast and what would be good? And you touched on a few of them there. The one thing I want to cover real quick is pretty much how we became connected, right? So, and it's crazy the power of LinkedIn, but I encourage people to follow you on LinkedIn because I think you share a lot of great information. And that's actually how we met. Lucien actually shared a couple of our podcast episodes that he had listened to. And so I had followed him, we connected, and then, you know, I was noticing your feed would, your posts would come up in my feed and you'd be sharing other information that I found valuable. So I reached out to you, said, hey, we should chat. And during our first discussion, it was, you know, apparent that you should hop on the podcast and kind of talk about some of these different things. So I appreciate it. For all the listeners, we will put a link to your LinkedIn page in the show notes so they can follow you if they'd like and take advantage of some of the information you share, because I think it's valuable. So I appreciate it. Let's talk about Quantum Surgical first. That's currently what you're working on. So I think you briefly talked about it, but what is Quantum Surgical? What are you guys doing? What are you trying to solve? Where are you at? All that kind of good stuff.
Yeah, great. So Quantum Surgical, right now it's a 80 people medical robotic startup. We're based in Montpellier, south of France, but we will have soon a global reach. Okay. We already have set a joint venture with a local partner in China, who's called LifeTech Scientific. And they're aiming to distribute the product in the Chinese market. And we will set a US subsidiary also in the US to address this huge market for medical devices. We've been founded in 2017, basically by the top management of our previous adventure, which was MedTech SA. And at the beginning, we took like 6 months to do a market research on all the fields of, I would say, surgery, but also therapeutic space to try to find a good equation for robotics. What we do believe is that robotics is an enabling technology to leverage a clinically proven technique. It has been the case for the Da Vinci in laparoscopy. It has been the case for ROSA in epilepsy, minimally invasive epilepsy. And so that's what we found in a liver cancer. We found that there is a great technique here to treat a primary and secondary cancer, which is percutaneous ablation, but it's not that well used for the patient. There are today like 1.2 million patients each year with this kind of tumors, and only a very small percentage can benefit from this technique. And what we want to do, what we want to achieve, is to provide a full solution that includes, of course, at the core, a robotic system to enable more physicians to treat patients with percutaneous ablation, so that at the early stages of liver cancer, you have a powerful tool to treat those lesions. So okay. We did bootstrap the project from 2017 to 2018. We did our first Series A with ABG, which is the investor who co-led the latest $600 million series from CMR Surgical. And that enabled us to develop the full product in 3 years from all the stages, feasibility testing, prototype testing, certification, preclinical, clinical, and of course, regulatory filing. And we're at the very end of this pre-commercial phase, and we are very eager to start the commercial phase first in Europe with a limited launch, and then hopefully in the US and China in 2022. So,
okay. So, how did you determine? Well, real quick. So what series are you on now? You said Series A was in 2018. How large was that?
So it was a 11 million euros Series A that we did. Yep.
And
right now we not sure what I can disclose right now. Let's say we have sufficient funding the next couple of years.
And,
we will disclose that at some time.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Okay, and then in terms of picking your markets, so you had mentioned you're targeting three markets at the same time: CE mark, FDA, and then China. Yeah, is that? I mean, they're probably the three biggest. I'm guessing they're the three biggest markets, right? But you didn't mention Japan. Is there a reason you excluded Japan from the first one?
Yeah, you know, already from a startup perspective, going on all those three big markets at the same time required massive investment and a great execution. So it's already a big challenge for us to tackle Europe, US and China. And I mean, with those three, there is already a big, big part of the market. But yes, you're right. We are also targeting other countries that we know are capable of, you know, buying surgical robots, such as Japan, South Korea, Australia. There are a lot of smaller countries, but with a very high interest in robotics and high-end technologies. And we will do that in the second step, because what we know is that it takes some time to, you know, really put such a disruptive technology onto a new market and get the market adoption. And figure out how you will manufacture a service, train the surgeons, and get all the post-market data that you need. And you cannot do the full range worldwide at the same time at the beginning. So we take a step-by-step approach with the three big markets, and then soon after we'll tackle the other ones.
Yeah, that's great advice. In terms of the CE mark, does EU MDR worry you guys at all, or not really, because you're not a legacy product, you're a new product? I mean, you know, I don't know. You hear the most of the complaints I hear for EU MDR are products that are already on the market, and they're struggling with the fact that now they have to go back and collect new clinical data because they didn't collect enough when they started. So is that an issue for you, or not really, because you're a new company, so you're going to have to collect clinical data? You know what you need to do now.
Yeah. You know, we made this strategic choice at the very beginning to go for MDR at first. So we settled the QMS, the regulatory requirements, everything for being compliant with this new regulation. And so there is no worry for us. But what's a bit more difficult right now is that, you know, that there is this May 2021 deadline when all the companies filed on the previous MDD, Medical Device Directive. And so we've happened to have our file being reviewed at the same time. And basically, it made us a lot of delay in processing our own filing, because the notified body are really underwater trying to, you know, address all these files from manufacturers that are waiting for this to keep, you know, marketing the product, selling the product. So it's been a very long process. I mean, way much longer than what we used to do with the previous Medical Device Directive. We went from a couple of weeks to 8-9 months. That's really a long time when you're a startup.
Yeah. No, I think that a trend that I've been seeing when I work with startups is a lot of US-based companies would actually go get their CE mark first and get on the market in the EU and then come to the US. And now I'm seeing a lot of US companies actually stay here and get market approval here and then worry about MDR or China or Japan. And I think that to get into it, it might be China or it might be Japan, one of the two. One of them, you have to have approval in wherever your headquarters are. So if it's in the US, you have to have US approval before you can go there. So I think it matters. So I think a lot of European countries, they're going to have to deal with it if they want to go to access, you know, one of the largest markets in the world. Okay, cool. The other question I had was, so you're treating certain types of liver cancer, correct? So they're early on, early stage.
Yeah, right? I mean, right now, what we call percutaneous ablation, you can use different modalities, which are radio frequency, microwave, cryoablation. Basically, it's a heat or cold to destroy the tissue. Okay. And they are indicated for very early and early stages, but there are also people using it for more palliative treatments for later stage cancer, but it's not within the guidelines in the US, in Europe, and in China.
Okay.
And that's what we target, because you can see that with the progress of imaging, there will be more and more cancer that will be detected early with all the benefits, including from AI. And physicians need something to really address the early stage cancer.
Okay. And can this be used on benign tumors like adenomas in the liver?
Yeah, actually, our message is focused on the liver cancer, but the technology in itself, it can basically, it helps you place a needle into the abdomen at the target that you've defined on the medical images. So, and there is benefit for percutaneous liver cancer treatment, but you can also biopsy or other procedures, whether or not it's a cancer. Whenever you have to place a needle in the abdomen, then this technology can help you to plan, to guide the needle and to assess the proper placement or the proper ablation, proper treatment that you've done.
Right. Okay. Very cool. Okay. So before I want to move on to your previous company, right? MedTech. Yep. It was called MedTech SAS, S-A-S, correct?
Yeah. SAS is a type of incorporation.
Sure. Yeah. It's like LLC or whatever in the US. LTD. Yep. So the acquisition through Zimmer, I want to know what that's like, because I think a lot of startups who are listening are curious, right, on what that process was like. You know, how early did you engage them? Were there other strategics in the mix? So let's just start with from the beginning. What was it like going through that? Yeah.
Yeah. So actually, not all people know, but it was like there were two acquisitions. I mean, there was a first acquisition in 2006.
Okay.
We had developed the Bridget robot for total knee replacement. And at that time, Zimmer was actively looking all around the world, new technologies, enabling technologies. And we started to discuss with them. And at the end of the process, they bought the IP and the prototype. So they didn't buy the company. Mm-hmm. So we ended up working for them on a consulting basis to help them get the product through the final phases. And these were very exciting times, actually. It was, by that time, the Mako system was out there. There was a lot of buzz around robotics in orthopedics. There was a really strong push from the CEO at that time, who unveiled the robot at the WOS, the big congress for orthopedics. And unfortunately, the robot never went to the market due to other reasons within the company. They had some challenges with with the FDA and stuff like that. So it was put a little bit aside. And 10 years later, they were interested again in robotics. And at that time, it was to acquire the company. So they engaged somewhere in January, so like 6 or 7 months before the deal was done. Mm-hmm. And the acquisition was led by the Zimmer Spine business unit. Adam Johnson was the president at that time. And it was driven by Indra Neel, who is right now the president of Zimmer Dental. So people in the company. The process is pretty simple. You know, you start discussing with those people from the business and from the business development, and then did they
find you, or did you seek their attention?
No. I would say we didn't sell the company. We were acquired by Zimmer Biomet. We were not actually looking to sell the company. We were, at the end of 2015, we were looking to raise money in the US, and it was not that easy. So what we ended up doing is we did what we call a bridge financing, raise €15 million to go through the next stage. And with these discussions, you discuss with the investment bankers, a lot of people, and those people were looking also at corporates to fund the company, and that's how they got connected, and that's how they got back to us at the end of 2015, and we met. I mean, the guys went, we met, we discussed, We showed the technology, we showed the people, because at the end, it's people and technology. And a couple of months later, we signed a LOI, letter of intent, and that's where the due diligence starts for a couple of months, which is a tough process where you have to go all over everything on IP, product development, quality, regulatory, clinical. They look at everything, and at the end of the process, they were happy with the results, and so we signed a deal with the key stakeholders, key shareholders of the company.
Okay, is that a lot of trips to Warsaw, Indiana?
No, it's more the way back. I mean, they send a lot of people to look at how we work, who we are, what's the status. So we had a lot of exchanges, of course, with a lot of lawyers.
Yep.
But it's more trips to France to really look at the technology and the product.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you lucked out on that one. Warsaw, Indiana is one of the most fascinating places because it's just in the middle of nowhere in Indiana, but it's the orthopedic capital of the world.
Yeah, you know what? You know what? I've been there like 20 times
because when
we were acquired by Zimmer in 2006, mm-hmm. We helped develop the robot. So I went there like 1 week every month for 1 year mm-hmm. and a half. So
yeah. Yeah,
I know pretty well Warsaw, Indiana, all the bars and restaurants. And
good. So when you guys were going through the acquisition, they're doing their due diligence. What were some of the key takeaways? You know, did they spend a lot of time looking at your quality system? Was it mostly, the technology? Was the technology on the market at the time or no, not yet?
Yeah. I mean, at that time, with the technology on the brain and on the spine, but they were interested for using the technology in other of their business, mainly knee, hip, and mm-hmm. all the musculoskeletal healthcare segments that they have.
Okay, very good.
So yeah, they're focused. Well, there is a lot of focus on IP for sure. All about finances. Quality was a big topic at Zimmer Biomet because at that time they had a warning letter by the FDA. So, it ended up being a big remediation project, like for all the companies that they've acquired to set the quality system at the same level than all of their other business units.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. And were there other strategics that were interested as well? Did they reach out at the same time? And if they did, how did you settle on Zimmer? Was it the past relationship or so start there though, start at the beginning.
It's a good question. So yeah, at that time, I think every big players in orthopedic space knew that they had to have a robot. So mm-hmm. everybody were looking at, what is left on the market and what they can get. So I will not disclose any names, but we were in discussion with the one world leader in surgical robotics, and they were very interested in the company, and that was at the same time as Zimmer Biomet. But there were basically two different offers. They were not structured the same. One was more an acquisition with a vision for putting this on the market for all other business units. And mm-hmm. your other option was more, co-marketing investment, pretty much the same way Medtronic started to invest in Mazor, one step at a time until they fully acquired the company at the end of the process. And after we signed actually the LOI with the Zimmer Biomet and another of the top three orthopedic companies approached us to discuss the same topic, but we were engaged into an exclusive discussion with Zimmer Biomet, so we couldn't go further.
Okay, cool. No, I appreciate that insight. I know for me, and I imagine for other first-time entrepreneurs, right? It's some people... start a company knowing that they want to exit to a strategic, right? I mean, that is one strategy. That's probably a lot of people's strategy. But, you know, I think that listening to you talk, it was clear that you guys had a plan to take this commercial, right? And that's what you were going to do. And I think that that was advice I got from Tim Blair in one of these episodes where he said, you know, yeah, you want to exit to a strategic, you want to sell the company, but you should always also have in the back of your mind that you have to take this product commercial, and what's your plan to do that? And you have to, and that's the actual plan you have to follow, not putting all your eggs in the fact that you think someone's going to come in and acquire your company and take a, you know, commercial for you or help you take you to the next phase wherever you are. So I think that was really subtle advice you gave that I wanted to highlight quickly.
Yeah. And I mean, even if you want, if your strategy is to sell to a big corporate, mm-hmm. you have to look at the value and you have to look at creating value for the company. And this goes through growing the company through all the phases, including the commercial phase. So you should not like try to say, hey, this will be, you know, the end of the process, I will be approached by a strategic. No, you need to push your company as far as you can through all the stages. And then something will happen at some point. You don't know when, you don't know where, you don't know with who. So you have to get focused on, you know, you have to create value for your company, for your employees, for your stakeholders, shareholders, and for the patients at the end.
Awesome. I love that advice. Okay, let's stay on the robotics track. Another reason I wanted to have you on is not only have a rich experience in robotics, but you also give back to the industry by sharing a lot of information, like I said, on LinkedIn on robotics. So in general, let's kind of talk about robotics, where it's going, trends, hot areas, and then we'll dive to the next category.
Okay, great. I mean, that's a very open-ended question.
Yes.
I think like, you know, for two decades, surgical robotics was like one player, Intuitive Surgical, in one field. But, you know, Today there is not one market with one player. Today there is like 100 plus companies, and there are many fields in which they are surgical robots that are entering the OR. And so all of them have different challenges and different intimate needs. And so those are all different market segments, and they are not all driving to the same direction. So what is hot today, of course, there are massive investment in what we call soft tissue robotics, with basically everything around general surgery, urology. So where the Da Vinci is leading the market, and you've seen huge amount of money raised either by startups or funded by big companies such as Medtronic, J&J, to try to you know, to take a market share of this. And this is really a hot area, but it's an already known situation. They are fighting for lower cost, greater adoption, ease of use, ease of setup, more flexibility. So it's a difference. Then there is the orthopedic market, which is also a big stuff with, you know, all the players, Stryker, Smith & Nephew, Zimmer Biomet, all the players looking at that. And then there are a lot of other markets. And there is the cardiovascular market, when you have, you know, catheter steering or bronchoscope steering devices. You have microscopy, who is like transitioning from the old surgical microscope to digital ones that are positioned, basically cameras that are positioned by a robot. You have a lot of things happening in ophthalmology and other small fields. But all in all, what we can see that is common to everything is it's getting digital right now. And in different ways in each market, it's getting digital in soft tissue, because now you start to have some pre-surgical planning that you didn't have before, with 3D modeling of the patient. You start to have analysis of the endoscopic images to detect the instrument, to provide more insightful data, like where is the blood flow, where are the key structures. And you can analyze those data for getting insight on how went the procedures. And in orthopedics, it's a bit different. You have like the rise of smart sensors. So you will have smart sensors in the procedures that will feed you with data on gap balancing or whatever it is, on your knee replacement or hip replacement. You have in orthopedics, you have the rehabilitation phase that also provides some data. You have different products like Smith & Nephew acquired a new company that has a rehabilitation product. So they can get the data and all these data from pre-op, intra-op, and post-op phases. They have to all merge into a single digital ecosystem so that you can really leverage, connect the dots. I mean, connect the dots between what was planned, what was executed, what's the benefit, what's the outcome, and AI is one tool that could help to get insight on with all this data that will be captured by all these components of the digital ecosystem around robotics.
Wow. Yeah, it's we've had a couple robotics folks on the podcast. So we've had the team at Mimic on AIM Medical Robotics, and I think I might be missing one. Yes, we had Henry Peck on as well. Yep. So we've had three. Actually, four. I forgot we had Jeremy Russell on from Freehand. It's a hot area, and I think that one of the biggest things that I see is going to be the training of the end users to use these new instrumentations. Right? I mean, that's. I'm guessing that could be a bottleneck for a lot of this technology coming out is getting this in the hands of the doctors and physicians to learn how to use this and get comfortable and be early adopters of the technology. Do you guys see that a little bit, or have you combated that?
Yeah. That's, you're very right on this point. And this is, this applies mostly to soft tissue robots. On our side, what we call the surgical assistant robots, at least the ROSA and the Epion. Mm-hmm. From our experience, a couple of days of training is pretty much enough for to learn the platform. But when it's manipulating instruments that are articulated at the end, and you have vision and you have 3D and you have all that stuff, then it requires some training. And that's where all those new tools around virtual reality, they will have to, they're already have a key role into accelerate the training, because the training is key for adoption and the adoption is key for the market success. So there are a lot of companies out there, Precision OS, also VR, Fundamental VR, developing all these virtual reality tool that could be very helpful to help, increase the adoption of robotic systems.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. I'm sure we could talk for a whole hour on robotics, but I appreciate the high level overview of where you see the market going. The one other big topic I wanted to discuss was raising money in France. So we have a whole nother series dedicated to raising capital in med tech. And that's hosted by Giovanni Loricella, and it's called MedTech Money, powered by Project MedTech. And people could see that if they look at other episodes we have. But for you, in terms of raising money in France, was it difficult, or has it changed? What is that like?
Okay, so yes, it was difficult, and yes, it changed. I mean,
okay,
right. Yeah, a couple of years ago. I mean, 10 years ago, we struggled to fund the MedTech SA company, and yes, it was difficult. Right now, it's much better, because there is a strong push from the French government, and there are a lot of European incentives to help you get non-dilutive funding. In France, one thing that is specific is that there is a research tax credit that you get when you invest in R&D, and that's a significant amount of non-dilutive funding.
Yeah.
So I would say robotics, it's still a bit difficult, because you have a couple of large European VC firms such as Sofinnova, Endura, IDinvest. They are knowledgeable in medtech, but I would tend to say that the US VCs are more have a deeper understanding on robotics than Europe, and maybe a bit less risk adverse. It's at least for us. I mean, I would not, you know, it's not something generic. I would say it's not. It's only from our own experience, and there have been a significant fundraising in France lately. A startup company in Grenoble called Essential Robotics. They raised 100 million. I think that was just this year. So it's getting much better those years than it was like 5 to 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm. So is it easier then to bring in maybe some of the larger French venture capital groups, or even some of the smaller French venture capital groups, maybe later on in your fundraising? Is that kind of what you've seen?
Well, I wouldn't say that. I mean, when you're a startup, you start with a seed round, a small series A, and that's where you will have difficulties in finding a small VC firm that want to take the risk and to bet on robotics.
Yeah.
And because actually the big VC firm that are more knowledgeable in robotics, they are not into the first two rounds because there are too small check sizes. So the first step is more difficult. And then when you enter the series B, or series C, then you have access to much larger VC companies. And mm-hmm. And those are more aware of the market and in the US and in Europe and willing to take risk and to write a check of 15, 20, 30 million to fund the company.
Okay.
So it's
okay. Can you talk a little bit too about you briefly brought it up, the tax credit in France for non-dilutive funding. Did you guys take advantage a lot of that, or is that just something you've seen other companies do?
Yeah, I mean, everybody in France doing R&D, investing in R&D can have what we call the research tax credit. It's a given percentage of what you invest, like it's like 30 or 40%. And there are only some categories of expenses that you can file, but for us, it's as we invest a lot in R&D, that's really a significant part of the non-dilutive funding. It's it's around 1 million a year, so it's not to overlook.
Yeah. No, I mean, non-dilutive funding is so important for small startup companies, right? I mean, because every dollar you raise that's dilutive, it's your shares getting diluted probably. So it's anytime you can prevent that, it's a good thing. Okay, great. Look, I have everything I covered. We're probably about 40 minutes in. Is there anything else that I missed that you wanted to talk about?
No, I mean, I just want to add one thing. I'm a big fan of all these systems in procedural telemedicine that are coming into the OR, and I do believe there will be some synergies in this system given by Proximy or Explorer Surgical or AvailMed system. You know, it's like the Zoom for the surgeon, and the same way you said, you know, it will require some training to get robotics adopted. It will also require some. It will require some tele-collaboration system to really scale up, you know, the use of robotics around the world, because we are in this next phase where there will be robots everywhere. I mean, that's the Medtronic CEO who said that in 2019.
Yeah.
Everywhere we have a procedural presence, there will be robotics. So
we go
to the next level where there will be really much more robots in the OR, and it will require, as you said, training and also support during the case. And this can be done through this digital surgery, digital platform, telehealth system. And I do believe this is a part of the future of surgical robotics.
Yeah. Awesome. That's a good one to end on. Look, everyone listening, I'll have Lucien's LinkedIn in the show notes. I'll have the Quantum Surgical website in the show notes as well if you want to check out his current project. But other than that, hang on for 1 minute. I really appreciate your time today. Thanks so much for joining me, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you, Dwayne.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe and leave a review. If you need anything from the podcast, you can always contact us at info@projectmedtech.com. Thanks for listening and have a great day.